Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a fun show lined up for you later on in the episode. We have six reviews to go through, and right now we have six co-hosts to go through. Aki's here, Dave K's here, Chris is here, Brooks here, Purnell's here, hey. Andy Sperry is here. How is everybody doing?
Yo,
there's a lot of people here.
We need some cool sound effects, like beep beep beep.
I mean, there is a soundboard.
Yeah, we do have a soundboard.
Yay!
Yeah,
we've got a full morning zoo lineup here.
Honestly, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. What's up, everybody?
Fucking yeah!
Yeah. That was a callback to me being an idiot earlier.
There we go. Love it.
And that is our friend Matt.
Yeah. I don't know if he's been on the show, but he really should be if he hasn't.
Yeah. Got to find something for him to play.
Another veteran podcaster.
Got to find something for him to play and get him on here. So yeah, we have a soundboard. Whole lot of sounds that we could go through. But there's a whole lot of people here instead. Let's just start at the top and we'll work our way down. Aki, how are you doing?
I'm okay, I guess. And you?
I'm okay, I guess. It's raining. I hear it raining in the background. Too. And I'm not playing a game I want to be playing right now, but that's a story for a week and a half from now.
He's under embargo.
Dave K., how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm actually eating a late dinner, so if I get a little difficult to understand...
Ooh, what are we eating?
Nailed it.
I was just thinking about the importance of professionalism in broadcasting. Moreover.
What was that, pumpernickel in broadcasting? Pastrami in broadcasting?
Is that a marble rye?
Ooh. Oh, dude,
did you steal that from an old lady?
Love that.
I secretly am an old lady.
It's a big Sam.
Yeah,
The
mystery at the core of my being has been revealed. No, I was just saying that it's professionalism in broadcasting is more important than ever now in the age of content.
Oh yeah,
it's so true. What are you eating though?
It is a turkey and tomato and lettuce. I think there's some provolone on here.
Nice.
Oh, and, TTL. Okay.
Mustard, a little bit of mayo.
Awesome. What kind of mustard? Awesome. Are we going with, like, regular yeller, or do we got some snow and ground up in here?
Mm-hmm. Yeller.
Yeah,
I love it.
Well, say the thing about that.
I love this segment.
it's black truffle mustard, actually.
Oh, whoa, fancy.
Black truffle shuffle?
Yeah, that's cool. Just like that.
Oh, man. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm getting ready to go play a show with the Returners out in California next weekend.
Cool.
Yeah, I'll be down in SoCal, so if any SML people want to like go see a show, it's at Brew Game Plus at Aztec Brewing Company near San Diego.
That's but, like, a really good company name.
I love that.
Yeah. And my friends are in the Returners, all but one of them are in Super High Tops, so we're already in a band together, but like this is a whole nother band with a whole different video game music to cover. And they started in Texas around the same time that Gimmick did, so you know, we're both long in the tooth bands. But this is my first time actually playing with them, and so I've been really working hard on that material because it's tough stuff.
Are your fingers holding up?
They're okay.
Are you a pick player or do you just finger the bass?
I'm okay. That's what we call it in the music industry. Hey, you like fingering that bass? I'm actually like, it's whatever gets the notes out the mm-hmm. best. So sometimes it's a pick, sometimes that's a fingertip. I kind of, especially with my six string bass, tend to lean on the finger picking because it's just a little easier to reach, like to go from one string to like a string far away. That would be like a big old wrist action with a pick, but with a finger, it's just like I can already be there with that old phalange.
Yeah, I try never to combine fingering and wrist action personally.
Right. Well, you know.
Respect.
Gotta start somewhere, though.
Don't cross the streams. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm one of those bassists that, like, I have no weird opinions about bass. I'm like, whatever gets the sound, man. Like, it's all good.
That's fair.
Because, you know, with bass more than music, I think anything.
Man. It's not about the playing. It's about the music.
Well, it's once you get to, like, play bass, it's like the easiest guitar style instrument out there. And so a lot of dudes will have like really gatekeepy opinions about it to make sure that it's like more difficult for you.
No.
So like four strings is like all you need. It's all Jaco needed. And like, you know, got to play finger style in a specific way, unless you're less playful or something.
Facebook post of the one string bass.
I posted the one string bass. Yeah, I know. Lemmy is a great example of the 70s was just full of like players that played with picks and stuff. Like,
yeah,
that's a lot of the best bass players. In fact, one of the most recorded bassists of all time was a lady named Carol Kay. And she exclusively played with a pick. She exclusively played with a pick. And in fact, a lot of session bassists would be asked to play with a pick if they were trying to emulate her style.
Oh shit, I had no idea.
Yeah. Cool. So the pick is a mighty, the plectrum is mighty in the bass world. It's just, you know, a lot of your garage band type middle-aged dudes are going to try and tell you that it's not right.
Because their fingers are too stubby to properly operate the pick. I'm anyone in the 70s could do it, given how drunk and fucked up all those guys were when they were playing.
Here's the funny thing. Since I started playing bass, the fingers on my right hand have gotten stubbier while the fingers on my left hand have gotten longer. I'll show you a picture sometime, but my left hand, fingers are much longer, like by a noticeable amount than my right fingers.
Oh.
Maybe is the funk eroding your finger length?
it's more like because the muscles are built up because, you know, it's like this hammering action. It kind of builds up the muscles and they just kind of like naturally tense up more and don't stretch out as much. Whereas the left hand is constantly stretching.
Right. So they're just getting like more swole.
Essentially. Yeah. Yeah.
You're getting
like
rippling bicep style fingers.
Yes. Actually, if you look at like some of those bassists like that, you know, have been playing forever, you know, your Tony Levin or something, then you'll like look at their hands and like look at the veins, just massive vascularity.
Real vascular. To say nothing of their striation.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So this has been a hand health on the SML podcast talking about.
Welcome back to Finger Chat. Joe SML.
I always noticed when I was playing more often that my left hand was like I could stretch it like a whole inch like wider than my right hand too.
Oh yeah, yeah. If I stretch out both my hands and put them together, they just like make this like weird like fractal because my right hand can stretch so much farther than my left hand, so it just overlaps by so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Wild.
I've tried playing bass, and I'm not good at it. But, Brooke, how was your week? How are you doing?
Oh, I'm okay. Doing pretty good. I found out that one of our co-hosts also likes a band that I love called Blind Guardian. And that really perked me up.
Fuck yeah.
It made me really, It's Andy.
That's me.
Oh my god, it's Dave too? Dude, so Andy was like telling, he was like, oh, I made the silly album cover for my friend. And even though he covered up, I was like, damn, I was just listening to Manowar's All Men Play on 10. And then like 30 minutes later, we're deep into like nerd metal. And it was super refreshing. It's actually my first time meeting somebody who knew of Blind Guardian, like outside of meeting people, like mutual friends who just love that music and getting introduced that way. So that was cool. Dave, we got to talk. I'm going to be sending you a friend request.
I like Blind Guardian, but like the impetus of that the impetus of that was knowing that you liked them back when we first met. So I listened to them because I was listening to a lot of music back then that was like unfamiliar to me.
That's amazing. Well, that was one of the better bands I liked back then. So I'm glad. Nice. I don't want to know of anything else I may have introduced you to. Let's just get it there.
Did you know Blind Guardian appeared in a video game?
I did not.
Sacred 2.
What? Hold up. I'm about to Google this.
Yeah. They perform Sacred
World.
They
were in that game where Jack Black plays a roadie.
Brutal Legend.
Brutal Legend, right? I thought they were in that. Are they not?
They might be. I know they're in Sacred 2, though.
Are there any official games official bands that are in Brutal Legend, or is it just all like somebody just made music specific to that?
No, like 3 inches of blood are in there. I know that much.
Oh, okay.
Kill the
did
orcs.
You know that Ozzy's the guitarist? Did you know the famous guitarist Bumblefoot did a Sega CD soundtrack?
No, I didn't.
No, I didn't. Which one?
That's rad.
Is a ill-fated platformer called Wild Woody. About a pencil that you erase things with your butt.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and the entire soundtrack, most of the entire soundtrack was done by Bumblefoot, and it sounds like him. There's a pirate rap in it.
Whoa. Very cool.
And it's like it sounds like, not a new metal, but like just like rap with guitars over it. Like, that's what it sounds like. I recommend listening to it. Don't actually play the game. It's terrible, but like do listen to the soundtrack. It's pretty good. So that's my contribution.
Noted.
Love it.
I'm gonna look that up. The game probably does suck, but like in principle, it sounds fun.
Yeah, it's one of those games that you want to like, and then you start playing it, and you're like, oh no! Go ahead.
It sounds like a game that one of the board of directors guys from the toy company in Big would have invented.
Yeah, like exactly.
A robot that turns into a building.
Like, oh my god, I love that movie.
With that same brain trust. What if you're a kid who wants to be a pencil? Where's their spokesman? Where is their mascot? Who speaks for them?
Right, exactly. And it was a... If Sega Multimedia Studio means anything to you, it's actually their final game. So it was internally developed by a wing of Sega.
Wow.
Apparently, yeah. Wild Woody is a DLC on a game called Shady Lewd Cart.
Interesting. I've never heard of that.
He's part of the DLC for it. I just looked at it.
I wonder if that's a different Wild Woody.
I don't know. He's a pencil.
Haki, do you know anything about that?
You're right. Go to our expert.
Pernell, how was your week?
Yeah, it was pretty good. Went to Chicago for a couple of days to celebrate with some friends, and went to some board game cafes, and generally just ate good food and escaped for a while, then came home, nice. Visiting with a relative who's visiting from out of state. That's been pleasant. And pretty much scheduled a bunch of activities going into the month of August. I'm going to be a pretty busy person in August. So, I mean, for the most part, still trying to get through some personal crap. But for all it's worth, I'm keeping busy as I try. So it's been helpful there, at least.
Well, if you want something to do in September, Ashley and I are looking to go to the PA Ren Fair sometime in September. We're looking at the weekend of the 14th and 15th, which is Wizarding Weekend. So that sounds
Wizarding.
Like it might
so everybody
be a fun
trusts
time.
Harry Potter, I guess, huh?
Maybe. I was always into like wizards and magic growing up. So like if it's that kind of wizarding stuff instead of all Harry Potter, like I'm on board with that.
I mean, I need classic wizards and warriors. I mean, wizards and warriors were my forte, really. It was a nice time. You know?
We need.
This is a fun game too. From Rare?
Yes, it was. Yes, Rare and Acclaim. That game was
I love Wizards.
Classic.
Did, did you know, Kevin Edwards, one of the original developers of Wizards and Warriors, on Twitter released, he has, still backed up on these big floppy disks, all the data from, the build of, Wizards and Warriors. And he showed the original title screen. The game was originally called Tale, T-A-L-E.
Hmm.
I am so glad they ditched that. We need Wizards and Warriors. Can you imagine looking back and going, man, I love Tale. Obviously, if we said that, we'd still appreciate it because the game itself is why you say the title.
But a lot of RPG fans. A lot of RPG fans will talk about how they love Tales because the Tales series. I'm going to repost it again on my Twitter if anybody wants to check it out.
That would be even more dangerous. It would have been competing with the Tales franchise. Remember Tales? Oh, I love Tales. Fantasia was my favorite. No, it was this other thing. This other franchise. Oh, we don't... What? No. But Wizards and Warriors, I guess... Do you think Fabio helped with that? Or do you think it was just Wizards
that
and Warriors?
That was the second game, Iron Sword Wizards and Warriors 2. The first game was just a really cool painting of a guy. Funny enough, the first two games featured a shirtless barbarian guy, even though the game features a fully armored wimp.
Yeah.
Hey, he wasn't a wimp. He had all kinds of cool abilities. He could walk and he could run. And
based
he could
on
jump
how
sometime.
Often I heard the hurt music in the game, he was a wimp.
Yeah. He's also a little scrawny for the fact that he's wearing full armor.
All the crap he went through, I think that makes him the strongest of all. He dealt with that whole RS game and made it out in one piece. Can't beat that.
He's the strongest of will.
There it is.
Because you had infinite continues. So, and basically you got to start wherever you died. So it's you could always eventually get through the game.
I kind of want to go back and play through it again because I remember it being very, very tough. It's one of those games where people complain that, nobody had the time to complain about, crap, it's infinite. You can just keep continuing if you want. That's too easy. No, the game was hard enough that you were glad you could keep continuing so you could actually see the end someday. So
I think that's one of the first instances of accessibility in a game where it was just die. You keep playing from where you left off. Keep going. Infinite lives.
I always thought it was very funny how a lot of early games you needed a code for continuing or a button combination because they didn't want to just out the gate give you free continues. They wanted you to read the in the case of Adventure Island, it tells you about the Hudson Bee at the back of the manual. But if you didn't have a manual, you may not have found out about that bee. Yeah. So, and then Super Mario Bros. A lot of people don't know there's a hidden continue option there.
Forget what it is, but I know it's there. Don't you have to beat it once to do it?
No. You just have to I think you have to hold the right button and then push start and then you continue. But I could be wrong. Let me verify that because I know that's how you do it in Adventure Island.
Hey, you got me thinking about how much I miss password books. It's weird how I don't want to do them again. I don't want to have to input them again, but I miss the actual keeping of the book.
Yeah.
It was your personal legacy.
You
it's
felt
like
so
I get all
knowledgeable.
This stuff.
Look at my tome.
And if you wrote notes in the back where it said notes.
Yes. I did love doing that.
Good stuff. Yeah.
But there was something to be said about it in the sense that you'd be people who got to the end of Mega Man 2 using Nintendo Power would always have the same password, but even if you play through the game, if I remember correctly, all of the passwords were different. Even if you had, all the same stuff, it's generally, I guess, based on the order of which you beat bosses and stuff.
It depends. It depends on the game. Bubble Bobble had only a four-digit, a four-letter password, so it's it was always the same thing. Yeah. Press and hold A and then start for continuing Mario Bros. It was Hudson Games that had to hold the directional pad. So, yeah.
Andy, how was your week?
My week was pretty good, man. Just been
Did you play Wizards
been
and Warriors.
Out. Did I play Wizards and Warriors?
No, but he played some demons in Wizards because we were talking about that earlier. Okay, sorry.
It sounds like we're gonna start a Blind Guardian cover band, so that's pretty cool.
Oh
I'm
my
excited
God.
About that.
So pumped.
No, my week was good, man. So far, just been playing the review game. I did our Metal Monday yesterday, which turned out really, really well. played a lot of cool songs. I was getting really tired. I picked up a jean vest.
Sweet.
What are those called? What's the official name for it?
Denim jacket.
Denim vest.
The denim vest. Yeah. But it's like a kit or your battle jacket. You know, I need some patches on it.
A tunic.
Tunic. It's like a heavy metal battle jacket, you know. But I picked one of those up so that I looked more the part for Metal Mondays. But it's been good. Just been grinding on some games. Been hanging out with the family. We're still like unpacking things and trying to like set stuff up, you know. I got a lot of things coming up too.
Are you still in process?
We're all moved over, but you know, it's like. You give us a month to pack everything into a box, move it over, and then, you know, we'll eventually.
Dude, I think we still have some boxes that are they're just in a closet.
Yeah. I mean, we like moved some. It rained yesterday, so like we had to move a bunch of stuff from outside inside. And I've got some rugs I got to do. So I got my tufting frame like half set up and work is starting again. I don't know. Everything is just like. Jumping again, so it's a little hectic, but taking it one day at a time.
Now you should relax with some Wizards and Warriors for the Nintendo Entertainment System. I love the soundtrack to that game.
Play that pencil game. Erase stuff with your butt.
Yeah, erase stuff with your asshole.
That's what I'm into. I do that now, so I might as well play it digitally.
Right his asshole.
Hey, we have sound clips for everything on this. my favorite Wizards and Warriors story was I went to Magfest 1 and the mini bosses were there and they did not play Wizards and Warriors, and I talked to them about it.
That's lame.
And they were like, if this happens again next year, I promise we'll play Wizards and Warriors. Magfest 2 comes around, they see me and they're like, yo, this one's for you. It went into Wizards and Warriors.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Good memories.
Yeah, that's solid, man.
That's probably going to be the music for the show, Wizards and Warriors.
Do it.
Can't go wrong with
it's
that.
It's either that or Blind Guardian, but I don't know how Blind Guardian would go on YouTube with the
Do you want to take down copyright notice? Claims.
Probably not great. But the Blind Guardian cover band we're apparently starting might pass muster.
Hey,
yeah. Nobody's going to know it's the real song.
Yeah.
Perceptive
Challenger will not get taken off of YouTube, I don't think.
Perceptive Challenger. Oh, my Lord.
I love it.
So, anything anyone else want to chat about before we dive into reviews? Or is there
any King Diamond fans in the house? No, just playing. I do love King Diamond.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Oh, my God. I love him. Dave, I'm adding you.
Merciful Fate, too.
I have a metal jacket. I have, like, my old Metal Patches jacket. And five of the patches are King Diamond and or Merciful Fate.
And one is the Austin Public Library.
He remembered. Yeah, that's what I'm all about.
I remember. That's the most badass move I've ever seen.
That's the most metal one of all, really. That's
yeah, so honestly.
Amazing. I wonder if we can make an SML patch.
I'm sure we could.
For sure.
That's what I need is more patches.
Yeah, we need to get you an SML patch to put on your jacket.
It's going to be some SML.
Yeah.
Some SML base picks.
Like a big back patch for that one.
We
need an SML finger lengthener as well.
Yeah. One of those like those contraptions that you put like the thing around your fingers, like these rings, and they're attached to like these rubber bands, and you just like stretch your hand like up, and it's like they sell them at like Guitar Center and stuff. They're like, it'll work out your hand.
Those are
it's
great.
Like, yeah, but so we'll playing the guitar. What do I need this for?
We could sell like finger shorteners.
Oh, so like a guillotine, little mini guillotine,
cigar cutter.
Yeah.
We'll call it Shorten My Long Boys. ML.
Yeah.
Shorten Stubbies.
We're going to have to make sure that there's either plenty of warnings and advisories on the package or none at all. Just no context.
Probably none. Like, hey, we would cheat
out. You know what to do.
Just to use at your own risk.
The picture on the box is a cartoon of a kid sobbing and holding a bandage to his bloody hand.
This show is just full of bad ideas tonight.
Caution, do not use this product.
Yeah, pretty much. Caution, do not listen to this episode. That's the name of the show. Here. Do not listen to this episode.
I was just over here about to advise Brooke and who else is in the Blind Guardian band?
Me.
Oh.
Okay, yeah. So y'all need to y'all need to both play bass and then call it Bland Guardian.
Oh my god. That's pretty good. That's write that down. Yeah.
Just all bass. No guitar, no drummer, no singer.
Bland Guardian would be like the yacht rock version of all those songs, I would think.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
I could get into that.
How do y'all feel about yacht Halloween?
Halloween?
Yeah.
Love me some Halloween.
I love Halloween.
Yeah, as far as power metal goes.
I think the last time, I don't know if y'all are familiar with Japanese wrestler Hayabusa, but... After he was paralyzed, I know, man, I need to cut it. We'll always have something for next week, though, but I obsessively watch videos of Hayabusa because I have psychological issues, and he loves Halloween, and he would wear his Halloween shirt a lot if you look at those old clips, even after paralysis, and he, like, reeled awesome. Into the ring. Wow. So cool.
Sick.
Amazing.
Dave saw the wrestling talk and he was like,
I knew you'd come. Yeah. Steepling my fingers menacingly.
Yes. Anyway.
Well.
Should we get to reviews?
Sure.
Let's do it.
Was that Aki? She loves that one.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
All right. Should we get to these?
Sure.
Let's do it.
If we must.
Yeah, we must. We got shit to do tonight. First game to talk about tonight is B Project Ryusei Fantasia, developed by Mages, published by P-Cube, released July 15th on Switch and Steam for $49.99. Become the A&R of the famous B Project in this unforgettable idol visual novel. Support a group of 14 idols from their humble beginnings through to fame, befriend them, influence their music, and help them through turbulent times as they follow their dreams. Brooke, tell us about your time with B Project Ryusei Fantasia.
Well, if you're just joining us, we've discussed wrestling and power metal, and now in the similar vein of that, it's time to talk anime games. Very similar vibes here. B Project, it's a lot to jump into for someone who is unfamiliar with this game's source material. Outside of seeing a bunch of their friends get hyped for it on a Tome tweet and the Joe, our esteem host here, asking them if they want to review it, and them saying yes, that's me. Who am I? I'm Tsubasa Sumisora, a young woman who used to work as a clerk in a music store. You're probably wondering how I got here. Personally managing the lives of not one group of male idols from popular boy bands, but several who have all come together into one super band called B Project. I was wondering how I got here too when I started playing this game, because it's a lot of information. I started to quickly realize, having gone into this game totally blind, just for funsies, this is not just one game, and a lot has happened before this game that is frankly a little complicated and kind of hard to explain. But they do a really good job to catch us up, and it's a very involved intro with tons and tons of flashbacks the game opens up with, even though it is a lot of information to step into. So this is a new game in a very big, a new installment in a very big popular franchise of games, musical albums, shows in Japan, but a lot of it hasn't been localized into English. Most people I know were introduced to this franchise via one of their mobile music-centric games. But this all actually started in 2016 with an anime and a manga. Do you know why I said anime and manga, not anime and manga? Because, like, basically I understand how Japanese works, but I'm self-conscious and insecure of using it, and I don't want to sound like an asshole. it just feels right. So, is B Project an Atome game? Brooke. No, I love you too, Joe. Thanks for having me. So it's B Project and Atome game. No, it's not. It's a very well-written and interesting visual novel and idol manager simulator game, a little bit, with a few branching endings, not so much branching plot lines. Though there's lots of unlockable side stories for specific characters. And those characters, I mean, this cast is stacked with all our favorite Atome voice actors. It's really quite something. But the fact remains, you do not romance the anime characters in this game, even though you were playing as a cute little anime girl hanging out with a bunch of cute anime guys who all absolutely adore you and praise you all the time, which is one of my kinks. Me, Tsubasa Sumisora, that is. Duh. How many cute anime guys? I hear you ask. There are 14. Maybe that's why this isn't an otome game, because who has the time? Damn. So what is it like coming into this game as an outsider who mostly plays romance games when it comes to VNs? First of all, the fact this game's animated at all, let alone as animated as it was, it actually blew my mind, the constant animation of this game, as opposed to static sprites like I'm used to, which, like, at the most might blink in some of the most expensive games that I see. I don't even know the right words to describe this, so I'm not gonna look it up. I'm gonna make y'all listen to my raw, uneducated thoughts here. It was like every character was a VTuber. They blinked, they swayed. I guess I've kind of seen this in, like, Twist of Wonderland, but it's a lot more than that. Even if it wasn't, we have so little time on screen for Twist of Wonderland characters. So, like, I've just personally never seen this before at this level at all. Characters are always moving, blinking, breathing. It's crazy. The character models felt very alive, even outside of that. And these characters are very popular from before this game for a reason. They're all very well designed and interesting, yet troubled and often extremely challenged, yet promising young men. Wow, I sound a million years old right now. Get ready for me to sound older. The Superman I mentioned is made up of a lot of different boy bands who have combined for this game, and some have combined already in some other games. These four bands are known throughout the franchise as Killer King, which I didn't realize was a Queen reference until like 4 days ago. I feel super stupid. Kitakore, Moons, Thrive, making B Project as a whole truly the traveling Wilburys of make-believe anime boy bands. I'm older than a Tome fan, so no one is going to get that joke. And I love it. I hope they don't.
I was going to say, at least you didn't say chicken foot.
Yeah.
Oh my God, chicken foot. Why?
That one's for Joe.
Why did you have to remind us of that band?
Yeah, why would you do it? I have not ironically been loving traveling Wilbury since I was 7 years old, and I'm never going to stop. But anyway, UI, similarly, from this, was just far more polished than most other VNs I've played. A lot of the UI comes with the MC whipping out her phone, and I've seen this idea approached before in VNs, but never this well. Visually, animation-wise, wow, I have so little I can even compare this to. Music. You might wonder if a game where you're managing boy bands, if there's any performance simulation element, any kind of rhythm game or mini game going on. There is not. This is just a game about the lives of people who perform music. This is a great time to talk about the music of this game. It slapped. And I can't imagine how much it slapped for pre-established fans playing. But I can say, after I finished it up, I was really curious. I looked a bunch of stuff up, and I learned a lot of the background music are songs from the previous games that you would actually have the band perform and play on stage. But now they've been instrumentized. Chris, what do you call what I'm trying to say?
Instrumentized, yeah.
Instrumentized. There we go. So that's what set it apart for me in good ways, coming from my background of the type of VNs I normally play compared to this. What stuck out to me in ways that didn't impress or enchant me? No romance. So it is a bit of a problem for me. Is it a bit of a problem for me, Brooke, that I couldn't date these 14 guys? Actually, no, it wasn't. It was a problem for me that I didn't get to date the three hot dilfs in this game who are not included in the 14 characters as a boy band. Heyo, the Daikoku brothers and Yashimaru, much more my speed. Do they have a game? Because I'll buy it. And this is the moment where I need to point out to Joe, this is why I didn't take you up on reading this for me when I told you I was feeling sick earlier. But you know what? We should have had Andy read that part. That would have been pretty good. Maybe next time. But seriously, just thank you, Andy. I know you would. But when it comes to not dating the characters, I wasn't super into it. Oh, cool. Sorry to be predictable. Oh, cool. This guy has MP Barbicane's voice actor. Well, now I'm just mad we're never going to French kiss. Probably not ever going to regular kiss, too. So while I could unlock side stories for characters, I did have less of a desire to. While I found myself whipping out my UI cell phone to take lots of calls in this game, which was different and fun and cool, and I made a fair amount of dialogue choices in the game, not many of my choices at all did affect the actual ending I got, leaving me feeling like this game was pretty linear for the most part, outside of also focusing on 14 characters with unlockable side content. That's not nothing. But considering that all being said, the story of this game is actually on point. It was suspenseful, emotional, imho, very balanced. A lot of these guys are sad AF secretly and have, you know, dark secrets. Damn, we love to see it. Whether or not it's one of my fave games, it's mad impressive that I found the character development for most of the guys very good and started getting invested in the story, considering I wasn't even familiar with their characters before. I actually think this game has a pretty good story that could stand by itself and would be fun for most people to watch in a similarly themed anime. So I can see why they sank so much into this installment. So that's cool. I did think there were a couple cheap shots for plot-driving purposes. That might just be me. Either way, I can't discuss it because SML has agreed not to go past mentioning plot outside of Chapter 1 for this review. But overall, as far as outlandish anime bullshit goes, especially when it comes to treatment of idol characters, I have a high tolerance for that, and even if I didn't, it wasn't that bad. But I do just have to throw it out there if you're completing the game. I did think this was a good game, but what do we rate it?
I don't know. What do we rate it? It's $50. What do you say?
I always kind of mess up that transition. I'm in my notes being like, what should I say next to hint to Joe that I'm done talking weirdly? I still have so much to get used to here. I give this a solid try it. This is an expensive game, but I give it a try it, which is exactly what you should do if you're on the fence and have any kind of PC at home. I can't say because there's a free demo on Steam to try out that includes all of Chapter 1, and that is a lot of content. You're definitely going to know very quickly if you want to play all of this game. So play that demo if you can. It won't be false advertising. I can't say the crummiest laptops are going to run it. I know a lot of like Atome fans and VN fans don't have heavy gaming PCs since it is a heavily animated game, but it's just a demo. Check it out on Steam. Give it a shot if you can run it. If you are already a fan of B Project franchise, this is a buy it. You better get this. While I wasn't personally convinced to throw myself into the series of medias after playing this, I mean, hot dog, I wish any game, not even the main game of any franchise I played, had an installment this well done and this expensively done. This is probably the second best story quality VN I reviewed for the show that doesn't feature romance, and that does really say something here. I think this could actually hook a lot of people not already familiar with the characters to go buy more content for them and treat this like a standalone piece of media. Those people just weren't me. This game is for the fans. A lot of high-level Japanese celebrity talent went into this, like the biggest stars that we can imagine for this sort of game, especially the voice actors. And I just hope all the fans out there who are playing B Project are okay, because I'm worried about y'all and maybe your heads exploded when you played this. Are you guys okay? All right, review over.
That's a good one. I liked it.
That's a mic drop of the end of a review.
Nailed it.
I started earlier today. I wrote "All right, review over" at the end because I didn't know how to quite wrap it up. And like, I was like, I leave that? I was like, no, Joe and Chris will be fine with this. You know, it's awkward, but like, I'm doing my best. Thanks for hanging out with me for that one.
I'm good with it. Works for me.
Okay, that's my new sign off for my review to signal.
Review over.
We done. Peace. All right. Brooke, that's it for you. You heading out or are you sticking around a bit?
I'm going to stick around. I want to hear Andy and Dave's reviews if I can. I might pop off randomly a bit after that, but I'm here for now.
Cool beans. Well, we will move on. The next game is Arranger, a role-playing adventure developed and published by Furniture and Mattress, released July 25th on Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Find your way in a world of breezy, thoughtful puzzles along a charming journey of self-discovery. Andy, tell us about Arranger.
Hey. I just want to say, too, like, I never know how to end these also. So I'm like, oh, was that it? Or... would it, Joe ask me a question, you know? Anyway, so we're going to get to that point, and I'm just going to be like, Joe, like, what do you want to know? Tell me.
Make me tell you answer.
Signal. Say, help. Anyway.
Making some safe words.
So Arranger is a brand new 2D puzzle adventure from the incredibly named Furniture and Mattress LLC. I don't think I've ever heard another gaming company with a better name.
Our potential vice president is now listening.
Featuring amazingly colorful and charming art by David Hellman, the same artist on 2009's puzzle platformer Braid, if you guys ever played that one. In Arranger,
yes.
Have you played that? Because that one's really good.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of that Daniel Guy's webcam like before that.
We
will so keep good. Talking.
Okay. In Arranger, we follow the story of a young orphan named Gemma, just a small town girl living in a lonely world, you know. her need for self-discovery leads her on a wild adventure beyond the cozy confines of her small town and towards a strange new world just outside the city gates. Gemma will find herself faced with challenges along her path in hopes of uncovering the secrets of her past, tackling obstacles, and meeting some charming characters along the way. If you remember playing with the slide puzzle when you were a kid, like you guys know the ones with the 8 squares in a 9 slot space that you had to move around to create like a picture.
I love those.
Right? And like, if you guys got good at those, then you're already ahead of the curve. Joe,
I'm awful at them.
Sorry to say that. Maybe this is not the game for you. You've been prepping for this your whole life, dude. I know. It's not quite as bad as some of those, and I'll tell you why. You guys are finally, the ones that did enjoy those, you guys are finally ready to put your skills to the test. That's because a ranger is like an entire world of those slide puzzles. But each one interconnects and loops in on itself. Each tiled column and row slides along so you can move the objects around Gemma, creating some interesting interactions with objects and characters throughout the world. It is honestly a little difficult to wrap your head around at first, quite literally. But once you understand the mechanics, gameplay is a breeze. The only thing stopping your movement is a force called static. It's an immovable force, striking fear into the hearts of many. Static binds itself to objects and creatures, but fear not, as this force can be disrupted and destroyed using the objects around you. A moment to think about your surroundings and a little trial and error is all it takes to get through to the next area. Various assist options provide the player with as much help as is needed, so you never need to be more stuck than you want to be. You can actually skip puzzles altogether throughout the game, which is pretty cool. But the puzzles are never like super hard, so Joe, you're going to do fine. There's no real battle mechanics in a ranger. It's more of a tactical approach to varied situations. You drag a sword onto an enemy's position to destroy them. You move a key backwards through a blocked path to unlock a door or reunite creatures by luring them with other objects. So those are just a few of the many, many puzzles that they present in this game. A ranger, even though we say it all the time, is honestly a unique sound bite here. A unique experience with some simple yet challenging puzzles. Honestly, even boss encounters are just like another twist to the whole slide tiled movement approach. There's no health, there's no experience gained, and honestly, no extra inventory to keep track of. A ranger allows the player to focus directly on the path ahead without too many outside distractions. And as mentioned earlier, a ranger showcases some incredible artwork by David Hellman, creating a world that feels alive and fresh to explore. Comic book panel scenes pop up to enhance the journey within the worlds. And the story of self-discovery flows nicely without any overbearing dialogue to it, too. Some clever ties to our world today and a few references for people to get out and touch grass is in there. Everything is one puzzle. Everything is solved one puzzle at a time, and it is truly an enjoyable experience. End.
I'm just gonna leave it there. I'm just gonna hang.
I don't know. Yeah, just wait.
Just
wait.
For yeah, me. Yeah. I'm just gonna sit on it. No, it costs $20. Sounds like a really cool game. Even if I'm not into slide puzzles, I played the game Pokemon Troze. Whatever it was, and it sounds like it has a similar sliding mechanic that this one does. So I'm very interested in this. I gotta say, if the devs are listening, I'm bummed it's not on Xbox. Come on. It's $20. What are your thoughts on this game?
I enjoyed it. I feel like a lot of the games that I get from the SML podcast are usually ones that I'm like, yes, I want to get this one. So I feel like sometimes I'm a little more biased, but I've already spent more than $20 worth of time into it. So I would say get it. The artwork alone, you know, sells it. As always, I'm a big fan of the art. And Joe, honestly, like I think you would enjoy it. You know, the puzzles are never that difficult. You know, it's simple enough that you get it after a couple of tries if you're stuck, and if you don't, you can always skip that puzzle and move forward too, which is really nice. So yeah,
cool. It works for me.
Heck yeah,
dude. All right, well, Andy, that is it for you. We will let you get going so that you could tend to your family as they are out in a blizzard right now, I hear. Yes,
They're out in a blizzard? Oh, no. I guess I've been on this show too long already.
Yeah. It is now winter time.
Oh, my God.
There's polar bears out your way. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, as long as we keep the doors unlocked, I think everybody's good. You know, we can just jump through. I appreciate you guys, polar bears,
you have to invite them in like vampires. As long as you don't do that, you should be good.
You want to hear something funny I was thinking about the other day? How you do have to like invite vampires into your home. And so I always think of like funny skits, you know, while I'm at work, you know, just kind of share them with myself. But this one, I was thinking about a vampire who's kind of down on his luck, you know? And so he becomes, I was getting ready to cook some stuff too, but, he becomes a spice salesman, right? He becomes a door-to-door spice salesman in this whole imaginary skit that I'm pushing. And he does that because he learns that, cumin, that people pronounce cumin incorrectly. And so he corrects them to say it's come in, which allows him to enter into their homes.
Come in.
I thought it was kind of funny. They're like, cumin? You know, he's like, no, nice. he's actually pronounced come in. And they're like, come in, are you sure? And he's like, ha, 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 I am now.
Don't mind if I do.
Right? Yes.
Gotcha, bitch.
That sketch will end with everyone involved getting pelted with vegetables and rotten eggs.
Right?
That fucking rules.
And, like, make some tacos out of them or something, you know? I don't know, but that's whoever has access to a TV studio, you know, please make that and just give me a little writer's note in the corner.
Get Lorne Michaels on the phone.
Right. Anyway, I appreciate you guys, dude. Thanks for the game, and you guys have a good show.
Yeah, we'll catch you next time. Have a good one, Andy.
Start practicing my blind guardian too.
And if you're a vampire, I would invite you in my house anytime.
Same.
Well, don't tempt me. All right, later, guys.
I'm tempting you. All right, next game to talk about is a preview of Whirlite No Time to Trip, developed and published by Imaginary Lab. It's releasing sometime in 2025 on Steam. In the heart of Varus Bay, a brilliant idea takes shape in the hands of an eccentric inventor and an eclectic artist. Follow Margaret and Hector in a point-and-click graphic adventure that will take you to the edge of space and time to help them avert imminent danger. Dave, tell us about your time spent in a little preview build of Whirlite No Time to Trip.
I will. And everyone, welcome back to Silent Mindful Listening here on Twitch. Let's begin your healing journey. So I've reviewed a few games on this program now, always with the caveat that I am bad at video games, and I really have no business assessing their quality. This might lead you, sweet listener, to ask why I keep doing this, answer free stuff, and if there's a type of game I can play with any degree of competence. Good news! There is! And it's point-and-click adventure games. I love them.
Huzzah.
I love dialogue trees. I love combining random inventory items. I love solving puzzles by clicking aimlessly around the screen, hoping that a solution will spontaneously come to me. Basically, any game that does not require good reaction time or hand-eye coordination is my jam. And I am here to discuss such a game. That being Whirlite, No Time to Trip. In this abridged demo of Whirlite, you play as Hector, an inventor who finds himself first in a weird dream / hallucination full of references to abstract art, and then back in the real world where he is a loser whose workshop is full of shitty half-realized projects. examples being a mechanical hourglass turner and a robotic arm that steals his Vespa keys. Also, he drives a Vespa. That's right. Your worst fears are realized. He is a scooterist.
The game's
typical of its genre. That's a real thing, and some people do, in fact, refer to themselves that way. This world is full of horrors. Anyway, this game is typical of a genre in that you wander around picking up random items and either combining them or using them to interact with other characters and obstacles to solve puzzles. These puzzles drive the plot and establish grander objectives, which in this demo are A, escaping the dream, previously described, and then B, leaving the house. A real furnace of ambition, our protagonist. The graphics and sound are fine. And what I've played so far is fully voice acted. Not always the case with these sorts of games.
True.
Especially if they're indie projects. The art design is interesting in that the characters and backgrounds don't entirely mesh. It feels like they were each designed by a different team and then kind of slapped together. But that said, their combined effect kind of works. It's visually interesting in that it creates depth. It's really, really important in games where you spend a lot of time traveling between the same locations over and over again. So it ended up being actually a pretty cool aesthetic, I'll say. In terms of tone, the game is pretty light. It's sarcastic. It is self-aware, which is pretty common for point-and-clicks. I would compare it to Monkey Island, if anyone's familiar with that series. Nice. It's not as clever as those games, at least not so far. Again, this is an abridged demo, so, you know, still have time. But I do respect the ambition. If there's a game, if there is a point-and-click series to model yourself after, Monkey Island's a pretty good choice.
Yeah.
So yeah, all told, it's a short demo, so, you know, there really isn't a lot of stuff to review. Wurlite isn't breaking new ground in the point-and-click genre, but it is fun and engaging, and I will definitely buy the complete game once it's done, should that ever come to pass.
How much time did you put in the demo? Is it like an hour, 2 hours, half hour?
Well, that depends. That is a skill issue. If yeah. you are, if you are,
that's fair.
If you are particularly dense, it may take you a couple of hours. Also, if you're, I think it took me like, I'd say 2.5 hours, maybe.
Not bad.
Yeah, not too bad.
Very cool.
And a lot of that was just because of like the gameplay speed, like having to walk to shit and so on and yeah. so forth. Clicking on everything to see what the player character said about it, you know, that kind of stuff. Just sort of exploring the space.
Yeah, well, it is. We don't know when it's coming out exactly. It's going to be sometime next year on Steam. You already said this is something that you're going to be looking into picking up when it's ready. Is this something that like the casual gamer should be checking out? It does have a demo now. Is this something people should grab and check out themselves right now?
Yes. Yeah, I think in general, I think point and clicks are a good genre for casual gamers such as myself. Because again, you don't have to like have actual real world skills to play them. And it's very rare that there are point and clicks in which you, the player, can die. So there's less, the stakes aren't as high. So I think they're a good lane for gamers like myself to cruise in. So yeah, I would definitely say pick it up and check out the demo.
Very cool. All right. Well, Dave, that is it for you. We will let you get going as well.
Thank you much.
Do you have any final thoughts, final words before we let you head out?
You know, damn it. I burped really loud when my mic was off. And I was hoping to repeat it at the end of this review, but I just can't. I don't have it in me.
I guess the only thing left to say is,
as an exercise for the listener, please pretend that I burped really loud and it was real, like bassy.
I wish we had a sound effect like that.
It's kind of wet on the edges. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The kind of burp where when you have your mic muted, Discord's like, your mic is muted. Because it thinks you're trying to talk.
I'm checking through all my sound clips from all the different servers I'm on. They have this one. Come on and slam, and
welcome to the jam. It's not a burp, but it'll do. Spiritually, yeah. It is.
How about this one?
That was a fantastic song.
Truly.
Right.
Ahead of its time.
All right, have you a good said one, you
want to burp? Aside from mourning my burping abilities, I don't have anything else to add.
All right, well, you have yourself a good night and we'll chat with you later.
Very good. Good night, everyone.
Take night, care.
Night. Night.
Next game to talk about is Frontier Hunter: Ezra's Wheel of Fortune, developed and published by Icetrona Ice Sit Runner, I guess, released July 26th on PS5 for $35.49, weird price, PC $24.99. This is an anime-style Metroidvania game with an RPG progression system, numerous weapons for switching, and an emphasis on equipment building. It offers three switchable characters, smooth gameplay, and impactful combat feedback, anime-style story scenes. Brunel, tell us about your time with Frontier Hunter Ezra's Wheel of Fortune.
So, in this game, you are playing as the title mentions, the illustrious Ezra. She actually was a character from another game that I actually learned about last weekend when I was in Chicago. Referred, I think, like Ezra's Tower of Fortune or Tower of Fate or something like that. But either way, this is actually a sequel to that game. Not to say you need to have played that game to get it, just that if you've played said game, this will probably be more impactful for you to experience, because the experience in that game resulted in her eventually getting herself a hunter's license, which put her on the ship that you are playing at the beginning of the game, which then promptly crash lands on an alien planet. And your game is spent exploring these environments that you're now trapped in, looking for ways to both escape the planet, engage with the locals, and both friendly and those trying to kill you, and also just acquire lots of craftable equipment and materials, because of course you are in a Metroidvania with RPG elements. So as you explore the game, you pretty much start out with just like one character, but then immediately get prompted with your second before eventually finding the third. And each of those characters are skilled at a specific set of weapon types. When you use them, you can actually equip those weapon types up to two at a time, various stats associated with each one, and then you can use the attacks associated with them at will. So if you like the katanas and rapiers, you can do that. But if you prefer to have yourself a nice, I don't know, like heavy blade, you can use that too. And each character has their own type, so it kind of makes them stand out and feel unique from each other. It's kind of that's the word.
Unique.
That's the word. And it's kind of interesting too, because it makes me almost like I'm getting old in that sense, but even from the early offset of the game, they give you a lot of options on how you want to approach combat with enemies in the game. Because even just with the starting two characters, you have six different weapon types to choose from. And since you can choose from those characters at will, well, I mean, you really just have, you can just kind of mix up your repertoire at will and do what you want. It's kind of nice that way, but it also makes you feel like, is some of this needed or is it just to give you options? And I think it's more so the latter, to give you the options of combat. In addition to just the weapons, even, you also get access to magic skills that you can equip and then use those in combat. When you use them, though, they do drain an MP gauge or a mana gauge that refills slowly over time, but also can be refilled by attacking little blue wisps across the map to refill them before getting to the traditional save point that lets you restore everything. So that is the primary elements of just like getting around and beating the stuffing out of enemies. But you'll also get the traditional ability enhancements by beating certain bosses and getting equipable items, not equipable, like, you know, unlockable abilities and skills like the illustrious double jump. But one thing I like about this game in a great way is that it brings back the smashing of walls in classic, you know, to refine like a classic Castlevania game in a big way. Because I've noticed a lot of Metroidvanias as of late don't really do a lot of wall smashing. And when they do, it's sort of like narrative required or rare at best. But in this game, they're all over the place. Smashable walls, smashable ceilings, smashable floors, all leading to juicy, juicy secret items and equipment. And it may not just be specifically a weapon, but it may be like a blueprint to unlock a weapon at the craft dealer back at home base. Get a bunch of enemy parts.
Poor guy just hiding stuff around his house, and you're just breaking everything.
Well, if it helps, I mean, it's this poor, you know, population hiding things throughout their planet because somehow some genius thought to put a treasure chest behind a stone wall, or correction, inside of a stone wall. But I don't know, I guess they assumed they'd come back in 10,000 years and their great, 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 great ancestors or descendants would just show up and go, oh, cool, treasure chest, according to the map, is right here. This is my dowry. Anyway, point is, you'll be doing a lot of exploring, wall smashing, enemy crashing, and leveling up your characters while enhancing skills. And if I didn't mention enough ways to enhance your character, you also get access to enemy cores, which are earned by beating the stuffing out of monsters and taking their corpses. Those corpses can be equipped by way of like a polyomino slot usage to your weaponry to give you additional buffs to like your various stats, which is pretty cool in that regard too. And some of the things that you can find in those breakable walls I mentioned are new abilities for the equipment you have. So you might start out with a cool special attack for your like your sword, but then question, why is it that I don't have a special attack for the spear weapon? I really would like to have one so that this thing could be worth using. Well, guess what? You'll eventually find many special attacks for all those things to make your kill machine mechanisms flow to the way of your design. And since they're all input by way of Street Fighter type button inputs, you have access to all your special moves at all times, so long as you have the appropriate weapon to go along with it. And you will want to use special attacks in this game because they actively, visually do more damage than regular button mashing. So while you could get away with just beating guys up with your melee attacks, you'd be kind of wasting time. And also, using special attacks is just more fun. The music of this game, I think, is pretty awesome. It gets the job done, and I've been enjoying it. This might be me being grandpa also, but I'm not really digging the anime tropiness of this game, though. It's got a lot of the usual stuff. The pervy helmet head guy, you know, the pervy friend who's perving on the main character, you know, the studious, you know, combatant character. They're all here. They're all here. If you got a craving for animu, you're going to get it in spades in this game. I'm sure that's what's intended, so not knocking it, just saying that part wasn't particularly for me. But I do enjoy exploring the game map. I do enjoy getting new equipment. I mean, it's a Metroidvania game. I hate that word. But I love those games. This is scratching the itch in a great way, and I do enjoy getting new equipment, setting it up, and going forward to see how much further and more of the map I can explore. And it is a big map. Don't fool yourself. There's a lot to look around with in this game. You did a good job on that front. All in all, I believe this is a quality experience. The price might be high for some people, but I mean, again, that's what sales are for. That's almost why true. I never really review games based on prices, because if you don't like the price at the time, just wait for a sale when it's the price you want to buy it for and get it then. But I think this game is a lot of fun. It may surprise no one to hear that I did have it on my wish list. I am glad that this turned out to be, you know, a solid product, because, well, I now know I can recommend it to future friends.
Your wish came true.
It did, Brooke. It did. See, we got to talk. We got more wishing. More wishing. So more of them can come true. Just like Ezra's Wheel of Fortune came true.
Well, let's talk about price on this one. On PC, it's $25, which seems normal. On PS5, it's $35.49. It's a bit of a premium price on PlayStation. I don't know why. It's A, $10 more, and B, $10.50 more. Like, the 35 makes sense. The 49 throws me off, and I don't get it.
It's a strange price point there, but I'm sure they have their reason. Maybe they're even trying to make a statement. Could be a secret password to an item in the game. I guess I'll find out one.
That'd be amazing if it was.
I feel like more games should do stuff like that, like the old days where you'd find like secrets and manuals and stuff that tie back to the game proper.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be awesome if the MSRP is a secret item to the game? I don't know why, but I'd like it.
Well, MSRP on this one, is it worth it? What do you think?
I genuinely think so. I will say, however, that one thing worth mentioning here, though, I guess a lot of Metroidvanias have this same quirk, is that the game itself is fairly, it's not difficult, really. Like, combat's pretty solid and straightforward. Even the mini games with turrets aren't particularly grating and difficult. So if you find yourself being like, I need a challenge, well, you ain't fun in here. But if you're okay with an easy, breezy, smooth ride where the combat is fun and upgrading your character to become stronger and stronger is a joy to you, well, guess what? You're in for a treat, and I think it's worth your money. I didn't even mention buying, you know, making food for temporary stat buffs, but there you go. I slipped it at the back. You're welcome. It's worth the price. If you feel like it's not worth the price, well, then again, wait for a sale. Get your store credit. Get your, you know, your PS5 Steam funny money at a discount, like I do. It's fun that way. And then you feel like you're buying it for even less money. So it's worth it.
Added to my wish list.
Yeah, you like this, I think, in that sense. There's, yeah.
I'm adding money to my wish list. I actually debated on requesting this.
It's good.
All right. Well, moving on. Next game, Mists of Noya, developed by Pixaralia, published by Cubite Interactive, released July 25th.
Noya.
Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $9.99. Mists of Noya is a survival game with many RPG elements, fight factions that evolve over the days, and bizarre monsters that will terrify you at night. Strengthen your base by rescuing survivors from around the world. Chris, what is going on in Mists of Noya?
I wish I could tell ya. Let's dig into this. To know ya is to love ya. That's the... there's one.
That was hey. Good.
Yeah, I had to work one in there. I felt like one would come up naturally, but I was just like... I'm just going to get distracted if I keep trying to think of puns. Okay, so Mists of Noya. This is a very nice looking, kind of confusing thing. It is a side scrolling platformer that also kind of has Metroidvania veins, maybe even not. But like, yeah, it's survival, technically. It kind of acts like a roguelike, but it isn't. And it claims to have, like, a kind of building parameter, but, I mean, I certainly wasn't able to unlock anything in that direction. The other thing is that it is a port of a PC game that has multiplayer, but this game does not. So it's really interesting. So I'm going to break it down as good as I can in describing it. And we're going to kind of do a pro and con of each little thing about it. Okay, so a pro about it is that it is, like I said, a highfalutin fantasy game with running, slashing, defeating enemies, picking up items and stuff, especially crafting items, because there's a big crafting element to the game. It has 5 selectable characters, which is kind of cool. So you start the game by, almost like an online game, really, because you select one of the characters, and they're just kind of like an archetype. You know, they do have a name that the game gives them, but you're really naming them yourself, and it just displays both names, which is funny. If you have, what are my characters here? I like to come up with stupid names, so bear with me here a little bit. I have a paladin that I named Buddyadin, but his real name is Rice. So there you go.
Buddyadin.
Buddyadin, yeah. That's kind of how it goes. there's an archer named Lance, which is, that's a blow to nominative determinism there.
That's nice.
I named him Boyle. So the display name is Lance gross. Boyle. Any Mega Race fans in chat? No? Okay. It's an old Mega Race is an old like FMV racing game, and it had a real like smartass host in it named Lance Boyle. So that's where I got the pun name. Anyways, we're going to be here all day. Okay, so you have 5 character archetypes to pick from. You've got your archer. You've got a very Sephiroth-like samurai. He's got, like, the long, except his hair's white, but he's wearing, like, kind of a little bit more, like, samurai-y clothes. You got your blue-haired mage, the girl. She shoots like these crescent things, like that really powerful power up in the Ninja Turtles game on NES, the first one.
Mm.
Yeah, she's got that moon crescents or whatever they're called. Then, like I said, you have your Buddyadin, who does a big powerful sword swing and can tank a lot of hits. And then you have like your ninja guy who just does like slashy sword, like quick movements, and has like some really interesting spells. Blood magic is what they call it. But what it boils down to, that every character has a regular attack and a magic attack. The regular attack is just going to stay the same. Some of them you can, this uses a skill tree formula, but a very simple one. You basically can, every time you level up, you get like 1 point, sorry, 3 points that you can put into both unlocking and leveling up skills. And like the skills, you know, they can get up into the double digit levels and stuff. So, you know, there's plenty of opportunity to level up, but there's not like, there's about like maybe 10 or 12 skills total that you can even get. So like that's, it's not a huge deal there. And then like you also can add parameters to your character once per level. So like one time you can raise your attack a little bit, defense, magic, defensive attack. All that's good. So that's kind of how you create. Oh, and you also create your own world, which is very roguelike. You basically just start a new world and name it what you want. I named mine Terra Ligma. And it just came to mind because somebody was mentioning I was like checking out other reviews for a reason that I will get into in a little bit, and somebody mentioned that the game's like Terraria, so I was like thinking about that when I thought about Terranigma, and then I made it a pun. Yeah, I'm dumb. Anyways, this is the good stuff. Now, In an adventure game like this, even a roguelike where you are, you know, you have a character with an established identity, an established skill tree, even though you're kind of renaming them for yourself and you're putting them on this planet or this world. So you're like, all right, let's get into that lore. There is no lore. There is no dialogue. This game does not have a scrap of text to tell you who you are, what you're doing, what your goals are, how to do anything, or when you talk to people, it just brings up the grid of what they're selling versus what you're selling. Because every character that is interactable in the game's town, which is, you know, you have to go through a little bit of a lengthy forest area before you even get to the town. But once you do, you interact with buildings and people and everything else in a way that it just brings up like a crafting menu or a buying selling menu, which, by the way, look identical. Like with crafting games, you know, like the grid of like, you know, all your items and stuff, and it just kind of floats alt text over everything to kind of tell you what it's worth, except it's like alt pictures because, again, no text. This game has no story. You have to buy books that will give you what one hopes is, because they're called preludes, but they don't, you know, you get the first four preludes purchasing them from a giant frog actually in the town, which I would love to know this giant frog's story. He looks like a cool bro, but we don't get to know. He just sells us the game's lore in book form. Each book contains like 20 pages of like a paragraph each, and they're just telling this other story that's unrelated to your story. I guess it links it up at the end, maybe that's kind of where it seems to be leading, but that's it, that's all you get. When you choose your characters, they tell you what the character is kind of like what their personality's a little bit like, or like, you know, just that they're a warrior, you know, forged in the, you know, fires of combat, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, it's not like helpful stuff. Like, you know, this game is going to make you play it for like many, many hours. So it would be nice to have world building, especially since you are building a world. Anyways, so yeah, you get your single player, so that's the bad part, and the good part of starting the game. So again, you pick up items by holding down the X button, which is just a multi-use, it interacts with everything, and the game does not tell you that, like, because if you push the X button, it does nothing. You hold it, and a second later, your character will start breaking apart a rock or chopping down a tree. Again, the game doesn't tell you what button to push. It just shows you an icon that says, you know, like, if you're standing in front of a tree, it shows an axe. It shows you can chop it. If you're standing in front of a door, it just shows a purple rock, which I guess means entering and leaving a building. And sometimes that doesn't work. So that's also really interesting. Some doors are only exits and cannot be entered, but the icon is still the same. So again, would really like some text there. Anyways, you fight enemies who spawn endlessly. That's cool. You get a certain amount of experience from them. What you really you know, to really get your levels moving, though, you really have to do quests, which will pop up on the right side of your screen persistently. I don't know a way to get rid of them, but they're all collectathons or fight this many certain types of enemies in this biome. There's like five, I think, different. They said 10 different biomes, but I only spotted five. So maybe there's some more that unlock later. But anyways, your quests are like gather flowers, 0 of 10, and you know, all this stuff. And when you complete a quest, they dump a ton of experience points on you, and you usually gain a level from that. And like, that's the way to build your character, because the enemies don't give you as much experience by any stretch. I'll tell you what they will do, though: attack you while you have the game paused. This game has active pausing, which is something that makes sense in a multiplayer situation where you have multiple characters on the screen. I've seen it, again, I watched other playthroughs of this on the PC version because I wanted to see what it was like. And yeah, it was like four characters running around the screen, and if one person paused, then everybody else could run around them. You know, that's typical. But this is a single-player game. It is not freaking Elden Ring. So yeah, if you pause to craft, for instance, then enemies can come up and frag you. The interesting thing is that unlike something like, say, Diablo 2, which also doesn't let you really pause, but is a much better game, unlike Diablo 2, you can actually pause the game effectively by just pushing the menu button and going to the Switch menu. That's how I had to do it while I was playing this game and would get distracted by the cats or something. So that's the kind of thing there. Having said, the action in this game is so good. The characters move at like this nice rapid pace. Attacks are silky smooth. I love playing as every single one of these character types. They all have something that's like good about like their attacks. And like I said, you know, the whole thing moves at like this great frame rate. Enemies are, you know, not too bad. So here's the negative about that. There's two, actually. One is, despite the fact that the characters move fast and they're responsive and, like, you know, the thing moves at a high frame rate, the controls are messed up. A lot of times I would find myself facing an enemy and then I would hit the attack button and randomly will attack to my left instead of right, even though I am facing the right and I have not pushed the directional stick, because only the stick moves. The cross buttons are actually for using items in a quick menu, and you will consume a potion thinking that you're going to be moving. That's on me, though. That, you know, that's just me not being used to this style of thing. There's plenty of games that do it that way. Anyways, so yeah, lots of times, and the fact that the enemies are spawning consistently through, you know, spawn points and stuff, and some of them come out charging, if you are standing there waiting for them and then suddenly your character's facing the other way, well, you're going to die. A lot of times characters will land from jumping and then won't move for like a full second. And that's not because of like any animation or anything. It's just the controls lock up. And then there's like other graphical and like platforming glitches. One is that most ceilings you can clip into, especially if you're climbing a ladder. So if you climb a ladder, you can pretty consistently just jump right through the floor and then drop down from there. That hasn't truly annoyed me yet, but it is something worth noting. Then there's the big glitches. I did experience a full game crash. Also, and this one has been reported in another review that I was watching. I didn't actually think it was going to happen to me, but it did. So the screen will sometimes just go black, and you'll still hear the sound effects, which means that your game is kind of technically still going, but you just have to reset. You just have to close it out and open the game back up. The game auto saves at a pretty fast tick, though, so like you don't lose a lot of progress over it, but it's just it mars the gameplay to have such things there and not fixed. So yeah, like there's different things like that. Like I said, mostly the game from its, you know, like these things can be patched out, and I hope they are. I hope that also, because I looked at the history of like the PC version, they did actually take out like certain elements of it. in order to fix them, and then they put them back in with patches, and that happens with indie games sometimes. So I'm thinking maybe that they're going to try and fix some stuff and then maybe throw in the multiplayer like it should be, because everything's set up for multiplayer, just does not have that option.
Maybe it'll eventually come in a future patch.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
Hopefully it's not like a paid update or something, but I'm sure we'll find out in the future. Anyway, the game is a $10 game as of right now. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so $10. It's one of those things where it's like, ugh. I could see if this game was fixed and the multiplayer was there and like they actually wrote a story and had dialogue with the characters, I'd pay $20 for this game easily. I love this game, and it's got such an addicting gameplay loop that I'm like, I really wish this didn't kind of suck in a way because of all these things that either seem like oversights or that they just kind of threw this out there half baked and they're just planning on finishing it, you know. A little later, but either way, for your $10, it's definitely a try it. Again, this is, it's something that's fun to play and very nice to look at. I didn't mention the aesthetics are the only thing that I don't have a downside to. Music and art, no notes. They're absolutely stunning. But yeah, like the actual mechanics of the game need some work, at which point I will heartily recommend it at any price point they care to charge. But until then, at $10, it is a try it. It almost feels like a demo more than a game.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Stuffed, developed by Waving Bear Studio, published by Waving Bear Studio and thegamepublisher.com. Crossplay multiplayer released June 16th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for $12.99. A spooky teddy bear first-person shooter where you defend your owner from waves of her nightmares. Aki, what is going on in Stuffed?
Okay. In this game, you play as teddy bear number one through I have no idea how many. And, this is a first-person shooter, and you're killing toys, basically, that are trying to destroy you and break down your child's door and wake her up, basically, with a little nightmare. And, yeah, you go around, you pick up different guns and I think a couple melee weapons that you can pick up. You're only able to carry two at a time, and none of them have infinite ammo, so have fun with that. I would tell you what the guns were, but like, they're just a hodgepodge of crap put together. They're like very homemade stuff. Like, one of them is based on a damn umbrella, okay? So, like, these weapons are, like, pieces of wood and opened cans of vegetables or beans or whatever, and, like, forks and push pins and stuff like that all combined together to make a gun-looking thing. Everything you kill has health, and if you kill it with a headshot or with a melee weapon, you get more experience than if you kill it via blowing it up or with a body kill. That experience you get to use at a little, I don't know, it kind of reminds me of a little fake girl's grill. I don't think it is a grill, but I don't know what it is. And there you can upgrade stuff, like you can give yourself an extra half a heart, or you can give yourself infinite running. Or you can buy, like, ammo with it, which, is stupid, and don't do that.
Why?
Because you pick up weapons, and as I said, you can only carry two at a time, so when you pick one up, the other one's just gone, period. But wherever you bought that weapon from on the map, you can just go there and refill it with ammo whenever you want.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so if you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to use this level up point, to which you won't have very many levels up, on that it is a total waste, because you could just use, like, 400 points to get yourself full ammo. The points, as I just mentioned, are used to buy guns or refill them with ammo as long as you have them equipped. Buying the weapon itself costs a lot of money, but as long as you have that weapon in your inventory, buying ammo is significantly cheaper. You also use these points to open doors in the house, and they range anywhere from, I think, like 100 points or 500 points up to, I think, 2,000 points. And that sounds like a lot, but I played through my first playthrough of that on solo to level 10, because I haven't been able to manage to get past level 10 ever. And I think I had like 230,000 or something, or 23,000, something like that. It was a lot. It was an unnecessary amount of points. And basically what this does is it unlocks new rooms which have a random weapon or weapons, and it has a random allotment of stuff you can get in there. So it may be, you know, just the next best weapon up from what you have, or it might be a god-tier weapon that'll make your knees weak. There's also another enemy portal in all of these rooms, so fun. Enemies get the spell from yet another shithole to come and try and kill you. Woohoo! It's so great!
I think the rain's coming to kill me. Can you guys hear how heavy it's raining right now?
No.
Like, I can't hear it at nothing. All. Okay. It is.
I think I hear a little something.
My weather app says rain stopping in 46 minutes. Fuck you for not believing in me. I love my weather app.
It's fantastic. Where was I?
Stuff to shoot things.
Oh, yeah. There's portals in all of the rooms that you unlock as well. I don't believe it increases the amount of enemies you have to kill. It instead spreads them up a little bit, which makes it easier for them to kind of surround you. And also, if you get far enough away from enemies, they will head to the nearest portal and come out wherever is closer to you. So the more you unlock, the more enemies can get around you and surround you and kill the shit out of you. Because if they start hurting you, it's not a good time. Because every time you get hit, takes off a half a health. And I think you start the game with like two or three. And usually by the time you get to wave 10, you probably have like 4, maybe 5. So that's like 10 hits at max. That's not a lot when these things can do multi-hit attacks. It drains real quick. And some of the creatures are real damn quick, which is why I keep dying on 10. Because 10 is where the shadow beasts come in. Up until that point, it's like lawn gnomes and rubber duckies that do multi-hit attacks, which really suck, or toy robots. But once you get to level 10, it's like these little fast shadow creatures that I don't care how quick you are, they're going to catch you, and you won't even realize you're dead before you're dead.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's why I haven't gotten past level 10. Because I played through it on solo easy. They're solo easy and they're solo normal. And I assume if you can actually beat solo normal, I assume it unlocks another one, because it looks like there's another space for another difficulty. I would tell you, this game is very clearly for multiplayer, because it sucks to play it alone. However,
yeah, the good thing is they just did add multiplayer in the June update. Originally, it was stuck, I believe. Oh no, they just added cross-platform multiplayer. I believe it's been online the whole time. Now I can't remember.
Has this been out for a while? I thought this was.
It released in December of 23.
Oh no.
Yeah, it released last December, and then it got multiplayer, the cross-play multiplayer added in June.
Oh no, that hurts my soul. Why? Because it's dead as shit. I thought I had this before. I didn't realize this game was already out, because I tried to play multiplayer numerous times, staying on there for over an hour each time, hoping to connect with fucking anyone.
Ouch.
I thought this was a pre-release game, so I was just hoping to find just one reviewer that was
No.
Knowing that, this game's been out for a while. Ooh.
Yeah, unfortunately, they only hooked us up with one code, so we couldn't test out the multiplayer, unfortunately. But as it stands, it's a $12.99 game. If you had someone to play this with, or you had a group of friends to play this with, is it worth checking out?
I think it's a try it at best. I don't think you're going to end up finding this game particularly fun. You'll find playing it with your friends fun because you're with your friends and you're hanging out with them more so than it's the game that's fun at that point. This isn't a great game as it is. It's kind of boring. And like all the weapons, like I don't know what half of them are. Like you can see all the weapons, but seeing all the weapons doesn't tell me basically what it is. Like some of them are sniper rifles, some of them are machine guns, some of them are standard pistols. I don't know what else is there because literally none of them tell you what kind of gun they are. So it's just, you just see a picture and you have to guesstimate. And well,
Thimber disagrees with you. Thimber saying it's worth it, even single player, and that you should buy it.
I did not. What's your rebuttal? Playing a solo. It's not fun. It's really not that fun. But could it be good with friends, though?
Do you think Jacob, and Bree got together and played this? Do you think it'd be fun?
It could be, yeah. I got the shit on Jacob the whole time.
I mean, you get to do that anyway.
Yeah, and that's what would make it fun.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yay!
Thimber, hey, if you like this game, Thimber, and you have it, you want to play, we can play together, and I will amend the review next week if you want to get together and play this. Because Thimber, it sounds like you got it. How's that sound, Thimber? Let's do this.
Now we're just going to sit and wait for a chat reply.
Do, yep. Do, 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 do. I don't give a shit. I'll sit here all night.
I know you will. I suck at online games. Oh, we all do. We're all terrible at everything on this show. Haven't you picked that up after hanging out for how long here? We all suck at games.
Fair. On solo easy, I did manage with just the base pistol with no damage increases all the way up to the 10th level.
Nice.
So,
Naki's good at games.
Yeah, I'm amazingly good at games because I have no life.
Not this one.
No, I'm good at it. I got. I just don't like
anyway,
it.
Anyway. Anyway, that is it for this episode. We made it through another one. Thanks to everyone for coming on doing their thing. Thanks to the three of you for sticking around the whole show. Thanks to Brooke, Andy, and Dave for coming on doing their thing. Music this episode, we're going to play Wizards and Warriors from the mini bosses.
So, cool. Never heard of it.
What do you think of that? Well, now you get to listen to it on the stream because I'm going to play it there too. So, good. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Show done.
Show done.
And scene.